I'm Adam.
And I'm Mike.
Welcome to The Dad Experience,
a podcast where dads can connect
and openly share stories.
Here's what to expect on this episode of The Dad Experience.
She was speaking to a young cousin of hers, Lisa, and said, "Lisa, did you learn any songs at summer camp this year?" And Lisa sang her Skinnamarink. And Lois liked it a lot, and she brought it back to Toronto and said, "Listen to this. I learned this from my cousin. Maybe we could do something with it." And we did.
The Dad Experience.
Hello, folks, and welcome again to The Dad Experience. Super excited today about the episode. On this episode, we have one of my childhood favorites, so I'm really excited. We have on the show Sharon and Bram. Sharon, you might know Sharon and Bram from their children's TV show that was on Nickelodeon, The Elephant Show with Sharon, Lois, and Bram. And they also have been touring and done their farewell tour. They also just released a book entitled Skinnamarink, which is from their TV show and was made popular by their music group. It's an awesome song. It's an awesome book. We had a chance to read it with our children. They love it. They love that song. And I'm really excited to talk to them about their experiences with their music, with sharing their music with children and families all over the world, as well as their experiences as parents and ultimately grandparents.
Welcome to the show. How are you guys doing today?
Great, and we're happy to be with you.
From Toronto, here we are.
Yeah, well, I'm really excited to have you on because I know we talked a little bit off air, but my wife and I were kids of the 80s and we grew up watching your television show, and now our children are watching the show and are listening to the music and reading the book and all those great things. So it's kind of neat. It's very, very neat, and it's kind of come full circle for us and our family. So
that's significant for us to hear you say that. I mean, a wonderful achievement for us is when we hear you say that the music is carrying on to the next generation. It makes us very happy.
Well, it's great. It is, and it's good music, and it's awesome. I'm a music educator, so it's always great to have music in the house and good music in the house. So it's a lot of fun.
What do you do for your part of the music education?
I'm actually a high school band director. I teach in the Metro Detroit area, so that's what I do. That's what my day-to-day is, and then I created a podcast for dads just so we can become a better dad, and that's kind of how it unfolded.
That's terrific.
I have to tell you that I played in high school, I played cello in the orchestra, and I absolutely adored my high school music teacher and the conductor. I thought he was the most terrific person. So some kids will be talking about you in years to come.
Well, in my high school days, at one point I was involved in a musical show that for part of it involved tap dancing, and they kicked me out.
Oh boy! Why is that?
Because I kept falling into the sink.
That's you just had an example of pure Bram.
But the first part of it's true also.
That they kicked you out.
Is it?
Yeah, because I couldn't dance.
Oh no!
That's true.
Oh, so there's no dancing involved for you, Bram?
Well, they said, you know, the people who are choreographers for us said, "Listen, it's not that hard. The first thing you have to do is just walk in rhythm to the music, and we'll take it from there." And I couldn't do that.
The fact is that we did have choreography in the show, and Bram did do some of it. Okay. Was not elaborate, but he did do some of it, and it was fun. And we got, just like everything we did with television, you know, we were novices when we started, and we did a lot of television over the years, and we got better and better at it. We loved it.
That's great. And you made an impact on many people, much like you were talking about your high school orchestra director. You made an impact on our family in music, and it's one of the musical things that I can remember as a child, and singing the music and watching it on, it was on Nickelodeon, I believe, here. So it was just, it's just something that you guys should know that you have made that impact too, as well.
Well,
so,
you know, when we first started in 1978, which sounds to me like before you were born.
A little bit. I was born in 1980.
Yeah. We had no idea that we were building what we are now realizing is a legacy. mm-hmm. that it is passing down from the children who become parents and the parents who become grandparents, and it seems to have a life beyond us, which is fantastic. It really is a legacy.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I'm really, really curious. You talked a little bit about your background in high school, both of you, but what led you to doing, you know, family and children's music and creating a show and doing all those great things for families?
That came a lot longer after we first started in music. I'll let Sharon start. And then
I grew up in a community that was full of music. Pete Seeger was part of our lives, and his style of singing, his group singing and folk music and all of that, I grew up in that kind of community. So all of my life, I was singing, and I was singing with people, with other people. And then in my teens, I started playing guitar, and then I got involved in the folk music community, which was pretty active in Toronto. And I did that for a while, but I was always drawn to children. So ultimately, the children and the music came together, and we both were involved in a program called Mariposa in the schools. Mariposa was a folk festival, and it spawned a program for folk singers going into the schools on a freelance basis to work with classes of children, and that's how we got sort of deeply involved with children.
Oh, wow.
I didn't have the same kind of early background that Sharon did, but when I was a teenager, I thought I might have a shot at the guitar. So I started playing a four-string guitar. And the first song that I ever learned to sing and play with it was Don't Be Cruel by Elvis Presley.
Oh, wow.
I did not come into folk music right away. That took a little time after I heard the first recording that I heard, one of many now, of course, was The Weavers at Carnegie Hall.
Wow.
And it thrilled me. A cousin of mine had been turned on to that some time before. She said, I think you need to listen to this. And I did. And I thought, oh my goodness, these are really good songs. They mean something. The words mean something. The music is great, but it's simple. And I could do that. and gradually, I learned
to do that.
Wow.
And I started doing adult concerts and folk clubs. And I was an accompanist to the folk singer Alan Mills out of Montreal. He did a lot of children's concerts and had people singing with him. I was a school teacher for 7 years. I taught sixth grade,
mm-hmm.
For a couple of years. Then I was an itinerant music teacher in special education.
Wow.
So I spent a lot of time, as I like to say, on the floor, nose to nose with kids.
Yeah. And that's getting in the you know, a lot of probably developmental music and things like that. So I'm sure that was really, probably really rewarding too.
Well, I have to say, I didn't pick songs for their educational value, that they're going to learn this. They're going to learn this from this song, and they'll learn something else from that song. I never chose that way. What I did was I chose songs that I thought were appropriate for the children to learn to sing at whatever level they happen to be at. And I figured this one out years later. I picked songs that they could succeed at, mm-hmm. so that they would become more familiar with what success feels like.
Yeah, that's great, Bram.
That is amazing. That's great. That's exactly, you know, as a music educator, that's what you want. You want to do stuff that the kids will be successful, you know, for my opinion, obviously, that they can feel successful with and get something out of it, which sounds like that's great. So did that kind of help you when you guys started from your background, Bram? Did that help you, you know, relate more to your audience and kind of figure out what you guys were going to do? Or was that just something that kind of...
No, it was the same thing. It was the same thing with all three of us, Sharon and Lois,
mm-hmm.
and myself. We all had similar feelings about how to select songs and what we were going to do with them, what their aim was.
And the aim was not, as Bram said, the aim was not to teach them.
Right.
We're not, they did learn things from the songs that we selected, but the first thing we chose was songs that we really liked. And we had to start off by liking them, and then hopefully the people we were singing them for would like them too.
For sure. Yeah. Especially if you have to do them night in and night out or day in and day out. You guys have to enjoy them, right? You know?
Yes.
Well, we always had musicians who were top-level professionals and arrangers and producers, and we tried to make the music as entertaining for ourselves and for the parents as they were for the children, because we knew that if kids learned to like something, they'd play it over and over again. And if you're in a household with the same record playing over and over again, then it better be good music. Because if it isn't, they'll run screaming from the room.
That would not be good. We were always very happy when we heard from parents that they were playing our music, driving their children to school, and they'd drop off the children and carry on to work and continue listening to our music. We figured that was a success.
It absolutely is a success. And I can tell you, being a parent to a almost 3-year-old and a 1.5-year-old, there is some great children's music and there's some okay children's music, and you guys classify in the great. I can tell you that in our house, but it's tough for the parents too. The parents have to enjoy it and want to be there and listen to it and be a part of it with their kids. So you've reached lots of families with your music and TV show, and you continue to be very popular and very present in the current day, obviously, you know, with our household, and I've seen with your social media presence as well. How have you guys been able to keep it going and adapt and do that? Because it's impressive. It's impressive to see you guys span such a long career and still be, you know, kicking it with all the new, fresh, you know, family and children's music.
Well, here's the thing. We decided right from the very beginning, before we ever stepped into a recording studio, and it was the first time we had ever sung together, by the way, and we didn't perform first and then do a recording, we did it backwards. We decided that we did not want to be trendy. We did not want to adopt the whatever happened to be popular at that time, because we knew that whatever was popular at that time in 2 years would be gone. And so we picked songs that we knew had appeal across all age ranges for the last 150 years or so. That's a bit of an exaggeration, but in large measure we did folk songs that had passed the test of time. And we like to call them classics. They weren't classical music, but they were songs that didn't ever go away. And we've been doing that ever since.
It's amazing. It is. It's impressive. You know, being even just myself. You know, I was never in a band that we toured regularly or anything like that, or did children's music. But we play local area weddings, different events, parties, and we lasted 10 years and everybody had kids and that was it. We couldn't do it anymore. So I give you guys a lot of credit for doing that and being current and being, you know, keeping that music, those classics out there for the masses. It's awesome. It really
is. Listen, Adam, if you're 3 years old, she'll be coming around the mountain when she comes is a brand new song.
For sure. Yeah.
The singers have been singing it for 40 years.
Yeah.
And we have.
But it is, you know, to look at it that way and to kind of flip the tables, you know, as an adult, it's hard to flip your mind to think it that way, but it is, it's absolutely a brand new song, you know, just like when we played Skinamarink for my children, it's a brand new song to them. It's a classic to us, but it's a brand new song for them.
That's right. And that's always been in our mind.
Which is really, really progressive for you guys and smart. That is very smart. I would have never thought of that myself. So, you know, why do you guys think that music is so important for our children? And maybe you can tell a little bit on your experience on how you've seen music help the children that you've and families that you've kind of reached through your musical career.
Well, first of all, one of the things that I remember, and this was said by a philosopher, and I don't remember who it was,
No problem. That's not a problem.
He said, without music, life is a mistake.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. The thing is that because we love music, music has enriched our lives, and we think that introducing music into the lives of children, it's a gift. It's a way to enrich their lives. And if they receive it, then they have it forever. And the goal, as we said before, was not to teach them anything. It was just to provide them with exposure to good music that they could make their own, that they could sing along with. And, you know, if they're ready to receive, and mostly kids are, then they're going to have that pleasure for the rest of their lives. In addition to that, there are children who are now adults who we meet in our lives who had strife in their early childhood. And a lot of them escaped into the music. A lot of them have said to us, thank you. You helped me through hard times in my childhood when my family life wasn't very good, and stories like that. And so music, it can be an escape as well. So it enriches lives, it helps people through hard times, and it's fun. And the way we did it, particularly in concerts, was music for the whole family. And for children to have that experience, which they share with their families, that's as good as it gets.
And singing together. A lot of the opportunities for actually groups of people singing together have been shrinking over these last few generations. It used to be that families would get together around the piano on a Sunday afternoon and sing songs, some of them religious, some not, but just get together and sing. Church attendance, for example, where people do sing together in a religious setting, are less popular than they used to be. But choirs.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
Choirs have boomed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Because people love singing together. It's a pleasurable interpersonal group experience.
So it tells you that what you learn from that is people really want to sing together. And singing together is an example of the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. It is. It is. And can you come and tell my band students that someday? Because they'd be so. It's great. It is. It's true.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Right.
Now you're a bandsman.
Yep, I'm a band director. Yep.
What's your particular instrument? I'm curious.
My major instrument was percussion. When I went to school, and graduated with a music education degree with an emphasis in percussion. So,
oh, that's fantastic.
But when, you know, I mentioned a little bit earlier when we did the band stuff and I would do weddings and different events and, you know, different establishments around the Metro Detroit area or around where I went to school in Lansing, I actually fronted the band. I sang. So, that was kind of my secondary instrument, which a lot of people, you know, non-musicians will don't always think of, you know, your voice as an instrument, which is sad because it really is. And that was kind of my secondary instrument when I was going through school.
You know, talking about the voice being an instrument, I happened to be listening to a recording with some hits from 1932. And one of the songs on this CD was the Duke Ellington Orchestra playing It Don't Mean a Thing If It Ain't Got That Swing.
I was going to do that too.
And there was a woman singer who was doing it, and I realized it was a very, very young Ella Fitzgerald.
Oh, God, how cool was that?
And she was one of the instruments, a solo instrument of the band. It was fantastic. She had that young, almost a teenage voice, but with a world of musical experience with it. It was fantastic. And if you have a chance, check it out.
I will. I I will. We're going to take a quick break. Don't forget the Dad Experience is a part of the Parents On Demand Network. You can catch our podcast on their app that you can get at the Google Play or the iTunes Store. Stick around after this short break that we're going to talk a little bit more with Sharon and Bram about their musical career and their new book that they've got out. That's an awesome book. So stick around after the break.
Hey guys, I'm really excited to tell you about a pair of underwear that I absolutely love. The first thing I'm looking for when I'm buying a brand new pair of underwear is, are they comfortable and do they not ride up? Well, this underwear that I've got from Lambs, they do the trick. So along with that, there's some extra added bonuses. Not only are they very comfortable, but they're antimicrobial, anti-odor, and breathable. They have free returns, and they guarantee their underwear for 30 days. So if you're not happy with it, before 30 days are up, ship it back. And as always, they have free shipping. And one little extra feature that is amazing with this underwear is they are wireless radiation proof. Yes, they have 360 degrees of wireless radiation protection. So those cell phones, those smartwatches, anything that might have let off a little bit of radiation, you're protected with these. So you're going to want to try them out. Get your pair. For Dad Experience listeners, right now you can get 15% off your first purchase by using the link in our show notes. So go check them out and get yourself a pair of Lambs. You won't be disappointed.
Welcome back to the Dad Experience. We're here talking with Sharon and Bram about their music and their touring and their interaction with families and kids, and it's been a great conversation so far. But we're gonna kind of flip the tune, flip, no pun intended, flip it a little bit, and ask you guys, one of your most popular songs is Skinamarink, and how did that song come to be, and come to be a Sharon, Lois, and Bram's staple or standard?
Well, in the days when we were just getting ready to record, we knew that we had to raise some money to do it. We needed to raise 20,000 Canadian, which isn't that much now. So we went to family and friends, and Lois was from Chicago. So she went to visit family in Chicago to have a family visit and also see if they'd care to invest in our project. And she was speaking to a young cousin of hers, Lisa, and said, "Lisa, did you learn any songs at summer camp this year?" And Lisa sang her Skinamarink. And Lois liked it a lot, and she brought it back to Toronto and said, "Listen to this. I learned this from my cousin. Maybe we could do something with it." And we did. We put it on the first recording in the middle.
One Elephant is Elephant, our first record.
Okay.
And we had no idea of what it was going to become. We decided to finish the concert, our first concert with it, and we've never done anything differently since. Hmm. It's always been at the end of everything.
And we never tire of singing it.
Right. And it was almost like it was a calling almost. If you finished it, you did the one concert like that, and then that was what you did. And it was one of the things that is a staple of you guys that I'm sure that folks look forward to seeing you perform when you perform it.
There's definitely a roar toward the end when they realize we're going to sing it. And now we sing it with the new verses, which were to the song. My daughter wrote the new verses for us because the song wasn't long enough to make a book out of it. She added the new verses, and we sing them in every show, and the audience still gets to sing the parts of the song, the Skinamarink parts that they know. And the book grew out of that, and it's a beautiful book. We're very proud of it. We spent a couple of years working on it, and it's illustrated by a woman by the name of Chin Lang, and the illustrations are beautiful. And the message of the book is really a message of love is for everyone, everywhere, every kind of person, every kind of situation, every place. It's all about diversity, and love is for everyone.
Absolutely. And I can tell you that we read it to both of our children last night, actually. We've got the book, and we read it last night. And my oldest daughter wanted to sleep with it in bed because she loved it so much, and the artwork that's all they've been singing the last week and a half. So since we've introduced it to them, and I'm so glad we did, because it is such a great song, and it is. It's nice to be able to teach that about, a love and what it's all about. So it is a beautiful book. And how did how did that come about? How did, you know, you decide to take that song and put it into the book form?
Well, we had done some books in previous years, but they were collections of songs. We did one of Mother Goose. We did one of
book called Elephant Jam. We did and we did songbooks, but this song was books. Different.
Right, this was different. The others weren't illustrated to any extent. This was one song, and it was a combination of it sort of coming together in the minds of a number of different people, kind of all at once. I think the first one was a children's bookstore owner.
Yeah, she would say to me every time I'd go into the shop, or several times, she said to me, "You really should do a book of song." And so it was an idea, and Lois and Bram and I talked about it. And then, I don't know, I think our distributor also got involved talking to this same woman. Anyway, it was born at this children's bookstore. The first meeting was held there.
And we're going to be having a release party.
Well, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, we're gathering together the people who helped us launch this book.
Right. Cool. That's really cool. So you guys, I think I was told by your folks that you guys are grandparents. Are you grandparents?
Oh, yes.
Okay. My question for you is this, because I'm just curious. And, you know, I see it through my parents being grandparents. But what is it like being on that side, transitioning from your parental roles to being grandparents?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that all of our children are adults now. And as a matter of fact, my first grandchildren and my second grandchildren too, they're all adults as well.
Wow.
I don't have any grandchildren that are, I've got great grandchildren who are little kids.
Okay.
So it's fair. It's, I'll tell you, when we were, you know, during our career, before I was a grandmother, I used to say to people, "I want us to keep singing so that someday I can sing to my grandchildren as well as singing to everybody else's grandchildren." Mm-hmm. So of course, that happily came to pass. I have two grandsons, and they're wonderful boys, and they live here in Toronto. One has gone off to university. I can't believe it. It was like yesterday when he was born. But we made a party when he was born to celebrate, and I told the gathering of family and friends, I said, "I understood it in my," and I'm pointing to my head, in my brain, you know, "I understood how good it was going to be a grandparent, but I did only when it happened did I get it in my heart."
That's lovely.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's true. I mean, you think you know, but you don't know until you know.
It's beautiful.
There's nothing quite like it. They're wonderful. And I love the fact that, you know, at one of our last concerts, our children were there, and my grandsons, my daughter and my son doesn't live in Toronto, but my daughter and my grandsons came up on the stage to sing Skinamarink with us.
Oh,
right. My brother.
And your brother, exactly.
And I have a younger brother who's very much a musician and has been involved with us from time to time, and he was on stage too. So it was a family kind of affair, along with a whole bunch of other people too.
Yeah. Old-time fans.
That's amazing.
Lately, I don't know if you know about this, Adam, but lately, the last year, we have been recording again, Bram and I. Bram and I recorded as part of the trio, Sharon, Lois, and Bram, but we'd never record. We did some duets occasionally, but we'd never recorded simply as Sharon and Bram. And in the last year, we have been doing that. We've recorded a number of songs that were written by my husband, Joe, my late husband, Joe. And we've had just a wonderful time recording, and we've introduced many of them into our show and sung them with the audiences and introduced them to the audiences. And as I like to say, they are streaming, so people can download them, the new Sharon and Bram songs.
That's awesome. And it's so great to continue your husband's legacy through your music as well, which is really, really nice.
It is, because he was many, many things. But one of the things he was a terrific songwriter. And he wrote a lot of these years ago in the 60s and the 70s. And they were great then and kind of forgotten. But we didn't forget them, and we thought, these songs deserve a new life. Mm-hmm. And we've done it. The Color Song, which is about homonyms. The Hug Song, which is about hugging. the Talk About Peace Song, which is a peace song.
Wow.
And
It's Okay to Be Different.
Yeah.
Wow.
Some lovely songs. And several of them, my daughter, Randy, who has been managing us, Randy Hampson, she revised some of them, added some lyrics, and like she's the one who did the words in Skinamarink, but she also has helped with some of these with these songs that sometimes needed an extra verse or, you know, that kind of thing. Uh-huh. So it's a lovely for my family, for sure.
Right.
And Brent's sort of part of my family too, so it's equally lovely for him.
Well, I bet you guys have all worked together so long and have created some amazing things and shared music that's so powerful.
Oh, we have. And we've gone to, you know, we've gone to shows together, musicals and plays.
Entertainment.
And, you know, and shared all kinds of music. We may seem like a one-trick pony from our recordings, but we try to be many tricks. But we love all kinds of music. We love classical music and jazz and folk music and all of those things. And we hope they make appearances in what we put on our recordings.
Awesome. That's great. So I have, one more quick thing before we close out. What has been maybe the most memorable experience or rewarding experience you guys have had performing together or performing music? Could be any of the above. But what has, is there anything that stands out as like the most rewarding or most memorable?
What were you going to say?
I remember I was going to sing a gentle song and we had just finished singing a very, very lively song with a lot of percussion in it. It was from Ghana. It's called Che Che Kule. It was my job to bring the audience down so that they could sing Candyman Salty Dog with me. And one of the first things I said was about Che Che Kule. I said, boy, that was really great. And a five-year-old voice from the back of the hall called out, I hated it.
Oh, boy.
All-time favorite stories. Now, what for me... I mean, there are many. I'm sure I'm going to tell you two things. I'm sure Bram would agree with me. We received an award which is called the Order of Canada, and it's recognition for our contribution, I guess, to the Canadian community and music and so forth. And it's the highest honor you can receive in Canada, I think.
Well, for civilians,
yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it's not a military honor, of course. And right. So that was thrilling for all of us, and we all three received it. But another moment for me was we played a concert at Massey Hall, which is a place that we went to as kids. You know, I went to see shows there and for the Kiwanis Club when my orchestra was appearing there.
To hear the Toronto Symphony Orchestra.
Exactly.
Play.
And so we played there. And after one show, we were backstage, and who should come backstage to see us who'd been at the concert but my high school music teacher.
Oh, wow.
And I was so thrilled. I said, look, everyone, it's Mr. Snell. So, high school teachers can be significant in your life.
And what goes around comes around. You know, you get back what you put out.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, for sure, and it gave me goosebumps though about your teacher, because it's really nice to hear that.
Yeah,
it's really nice to hear that about folks. So where you talked a little bit about they can find your music streaming. Where can folks find you and find out more information, websites, or where they can find music to stream? All those great things. You can go ahead and tell our listeners.
All of that information about us is at our website, which is sharonandbram.com. And everything you need to know about us, you should be able to find there.
Right, the and is spelled out.
Okay. And I will put it in our show notes below the recording when people get this, so they can just click on that link and go directly there.
Right.
Lovely.
Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us. This has been an amazing experience for me. So, and I know that I'm going to be kind of a hero in this house after this, because I can tell my kids that I talked to you guys. So,
thank you. It's lovely to chat with you.
Well, thank you so much, and I look forward to hearing much more from you guys and listening to lots more music and great things to come. So thanks so much. And thanks again for listening to The Dad Experience.
This podcast is a proud member of Parents on Demand, a network of high-quality shows for families just like yours. Download our free network app on Apple and Android and listen to your favorite episodes.